This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. Let's talk about the prospect of interstate travel. Now, yesterday, Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin has called on those who want to balik kampung to do a COVID-19 self-test before making interstate travel. In fact, he said people living in high contact and mobility settings are encouraged to conduct regular COVID-19 testing.
Yeah, of course, this comes after an earlier statement by our health DG, Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham, who said that interstate travel will be allowed in the next few days, right? So previously, the government has also announced that restrictions will be lifted once Malaysia vaccinates 90% of the adult population. And according to COVID Now, that number is about 89.1%. So we're literally a few basis points away.
We are so close. But are we ready to open our state borders? And what are the considerations for traveling across states that we need to keep in mind and in order to keep ourselves safe? So for more on this, we have Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician, on the line. Good morning, Dr. Helmi. Thanks for joining us today. What do you think? Are we ready to open state borders and allow for interstate travel?
Hi, good morning. I think we will never have a perfect situation or a perfect time to do this. And having things like ensuring sufficient numbers of people are vaccinated, ensuring that the hospital capacities are not unduly stretched, I think those are key considerations that were taken before going down the route of allowing interstate travel. And it's balancing the ideal public health scenario where everyone is restricted and everyone's kind of kept in their own little bubbles with the reality on the ground where people are struggling, both in terms of the economic impact and also when it comes to, you know, things like mental health. So simple situations where, you know, families are being separated from each other. I think all those things need to be taken into consideration. So, yeah, I think it is, I wouldn't say it's perfect in the sense that, you know, there's still lots of uncertainties out there. But I think it is definitely a necessary step. And as we move towards accepting this as something more endemic rather than trying to clamp down on particular clusters, then I think it's something that's definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah, Doc, Health Minister KJ said that those unvaccinated will not be denied interstate travel because, you know, you can't check one by one or do a roadblock. What are your thoughts on that?
I think once again, it goes down to the practicality of it because in many, many situations, you would see that roadblocks probably cause more hassles than it's worth, you know, traffic jams, the poor policeman probably thinking, why on earth was I given this shift, you know, having to check things? And, you know, if you were to put ourselves in that situation, how much benefit do you get from it? And I have my doubts about how well it works because even back when, you know, we had the emergency and there were roadblocks and things, people were traveling all over the place, you know, as long as they had letters and things. So, you know, that always struck me as being particularly dodgy in some ways. But I suppose going back to your point, the key thing here is the practicality of it. And it's also this kind of subtle move towards getting people to be a little bit more, I think, aware and responsible and taking a bit more autonomy in terms of the decision making. So to me, it's a step that is necessary. And I think that should not take away the fact that people should still be checked on the ground. So, you know, you may not have roadblocks, but that shouldn't stop people from looking into how things are in restaurants and to spot checking people who are visiting certain establishments. But I think it also highlights the importance of education, because one thing that we still can do better, I feel, is comms education when it comes to health issues. And this is something that applies not just to COVID, but a lot of other issues as well.
So on a related note, I mean, the minister said no roadblocks, but other companies, AirAsia, for example, only allows vaccinated adults on their planes. Do you agree with measures like that? Is this something that individual organizations and I guess services are just going to have to take on themselves, whether to allow only vaccinated individuals or not?
I would agree with such a move because once again, we are trying our best to put in appropriate restrictions without stopping people from doing movements that are necessary. So it's one thing to move across borders to say visit a family, but at the same time in a commercial airline, there is that need to not only just protect other customers or other people on board, but also the staff. And it's a very different situation where you are essentially in a moving piece of metal in the air where ventilation may be a little bit suspect. So you can understand why you want to take extra precautions in such scenarios. And even beyond airlines, you know, office spaces, workspaces, if you look at how things are in the States, there's this whole great debate going on right now with regards to individual rights versus the rights of others to be protected from the COVID. And I'm biased in the sense that I'm a respiratory physician. So of course I want less people to fall sick. So I would be leaning towards nudging with the right policies to ensure that more people pick up and actually take up vaccinations.
Yeah, so what other SOPs would you like to see with regards to interstate traveling? What lessons can we learn from, for example, the Sabah elections?
For me, I think you can have lots of SOPs, but I would say two things that I always feel need to be a little bit more focused on is one is the implementation of it, because we have these beautiful long guidelines and SOPs, which to be honest, I need to kind of remind myself all the time. But that links into the fact that once again, we need to empower and educate individuals. And until today, you can still meet individuals who don't really know what necessary self-protective measures need to be taken. So things like, when do I actually self-isolate? What is a close contact? What's a casual contact? When do I actually test myself? There are lots and lots of individuals out there who don't really know what to do when they are faced with a situation where they may be exposed or they may have symptoms. And I feel rather than focusing on the SOPs, we need to focus and shift a little bit more towards the educating and the empowering of these individuals. And that has to come through persistent, constant, repetitive comms through whatever channels and media that's available.
Mm. And I guess once the borders are open, what do you think we should be monitoring to avoid another outbreak? You know, what kind of indicators should we be keeping an eye on in order to whether to decide whether, you know, to travel or not to travel or to close borders again?
I don't think we can ever say that we'll prevent an outbreak. And I think we have to be a little bit more accepting of the fact that these things, what we should be aiming for, you know, rather than huge tsunamis, having a bit more of an undulating kind of picture where the numbers go up a little bit and come down a bit. And to me, once again, it goes back down to the degree to which healthcare facilities are stretched. So if you have a lot of category 4, category 5 patients that is damming the system, as in blocking the system, I wasn't cursing there. Then you are kind of, you know, then you know you're in danger. Then that may be very much linked to certain geographical variations, because what is going to stretch a state like Pahang may be different from what's going to stretch a state like Malacca. So I think that will be more indicative of what measures should be taken. And I think these things should be monitored closely. And in terms of actually managing it and moving it, it has to be done in a very agile and fast fashion.
Yeah, so also what are the measures we can take as individuals so that we can minimize any risk?
I would say that, you know, it goes back to the same old things that we keep learning over and over again, which is basically, you know, don't travel unless you have to. And then it comes to a point where, well, I don't really have to, but I'm so sick and tired of, you know, living and being in a studio or in work, and, you know, you start confusing Mondays for Fridays. So you can see how it kind of has effects on people, right? So I would say that, you know, it goes back to, yes, minimizing travel if you can. But if you are traveling, then wear your mask, make sure you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated or you are with people who are not vaccinated, maybe have that conversation about why, because there's still a lot of misconception, a lot of fake news out there. Test quickly, test readily, identify symptoms quite quickly. And I think last but certainly not least, I think be quite open and be honest with oneself when it comes to the degree of exposure, because that too plays a huge role in terms of minimizing the impact and the spread of the disease.
So you mentioned earlier, Dr. Helmy, that there isn't really a way to prevent an outbreak. So if and when that happens, how do you think the government should be handling it, especially as we're supposed to start treating COVID-19 as endemic, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
I would think that at this point in time, whilst things are relatively quiet, and I use the word relatively here, we know there is, once again, the opportunity to improve capacity building. And interstate travel is one thing. I mean, I'm looking a bit more ahead and thinking, okay, this is actually, in a way, preparation for, let's say, there's going to be a state elections. You know, there's going to be a lot of travel there. What's going to happen then? Is our hospitals going to be stretched in those circumstances? And when schools fully reopen, you know, there will undoubtedly be an increase in the number of cases. But then if we are moving down into a more endemic type situation, then what should be ideal is those who don't need to be in hospitals, so your categories 1, your category 2, they need to be, once again, more empowered. They should know what to do, where to get information from. Even yesterday, I've had patients, or even friends rather, calling me because they've been diagnosed with category 1 and 2 and they do not know what to do. You know, they're like, hey, help me. Where do I go? What do I do? Am I really sick? Do I need to see a doctor? And these are people who are, you know, well-educated, urban and whatnot, and you would think that they would have access to information at the tip of their fingers. What more people who are perhaps further into the rural parts of Malaysia who may not have access to this information? So I'm constantly kind of in a way repeating myself. I think it's really about educating people so that they know the difference between having symptoms that needs to put them at home and quarantine and self-isolate at home versus symptoms that are significant and severe enough that they need to be hospitalized. And I think that's where a lot of the focus should be.
Yeah, Doc, zooming out from this, are we ready to open international borders? And what are the considerations that we should make here?
I would be a little bit more hesitant because in terms of like international borders, it depends very much on the countries that we are opening up to and the volume of travels that we can expect as well. The other thing is those countries, what kind of variants may be present, because once again, there are lots of variants of interest, there are lots of variants of concern. And I think that needs to be deep dive a little bit more before deciding which country we should allow people to travel to. So I wouldn't rush into that. And I think having a little bit more experience of opening things up internally, I think would be the first step before deciding on how it's going to affect us internationally. Just now, there was this news report about Langkawi, right, being open up to travelers. So I think having a little bit of a sandbox or having a travel bubble of sorts will give us a bit of an idea of what to expect.
Thanks very much, Dr. Helmi, for chatting this morning. That was Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician, talking to us about what safe interstate travel could look like, and just the outlook for opening international borders as well.
Yeah, you get the sense that the government has done all it can, right? It's done its part in terms of vaccination, in terms of the rollout, just in terms of also maybe, you know, what we're going to do for our children as well. And at the end of the day, we've got 1.5 years of experience in dealing with this thing. We should know the SOPs by now. And the economy really, honestly, truly cannot take another bunch of lockdowns. So I think we're, you know, it's at the right place at the right time for these things to happen already.
Dr. Helmi did say that. I mean, this is as good enough a time as any. There's no going to be perfect. There are no perfect conditions to wait for, you know. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.